on CFAX 1070.
Good morning, everyone. Great to have you with us. Welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
We're going to talk about the province's impaired driving scheme. You're going to give us some background, and we're going to evolve onto what you've uncovered as well.
Yes. In British Columbia, back in 2010, the province introduced what could be described as an administrative scheme to deal with impaired driving. And the idea is that rather than charging people criminally with impaired driving, except in very limited circumstances, where, for example, there's an accident, the police will now proceed under this provincial administrative scheme that results in a driving prohibition, ordinarily 90 days, and a fine and an impoundment of a vehicle. And the concept was to save money. It avoids the police having to go to court for a criminal case, and they can process people more quickly. Now, somehow the province managed to sell that as being tougher on impaired driving, when in fact that's for most people not the actual consequence. Now, since 2010, there have been a number of concerns raised about the fairness of that new scheme. And the fairness concerns revolve around the fact that the scheme is premised upon using a roadside screening device rather than a more accurate breath testing device back at the police station. And then further, the review process is a much more limited one than what would occur in a criminal case. The police officers don't show up at a hearing. It's based on paper submissions ordinarily. And the worry is that innocent people can get caught up in it because of the lower threshold and more limited sort of review that is available. So that issue has worked its way through the court and sort of in the court of public opinion for the past number of years. And one of the things that's been a part of that debate has been claims by the provincial government that the new scheme, whether it's more or less fair, has been effective. That's been the thrust of their response to the complaints about fairness and whether innocent people are being subject to these penalties. And in fact, the government has provided various statistical claims. They've said, oh, various numbers of lives have been saved. In fact, last year, the Attorney General is repeatedly quoted as saying 260 lives have been saved since the scheme was introduced in 2010. And that's been...
Saving lives by getting drunk drivers off the road?
Yes, I guess suggesting that it's acting as a deterrent or that it's a more effective way to punish people more quickly. So they said, well, it's more effective. It saved this number of lives. And that's been the response to, in part, complaints about the fairness of the scheme and the review process. And that was also the thrust of the... response the government made when the case was challenged or the scheme was challenged in court, including all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada last year. They were saying, look, it's effective, it saved this number of lives. So I made a Freedom of Information request more than a year ago, trying to find out how that those sort of claims were arrived at.
Yeah.
Asking for whether there was some statistical analysis sorting out whether this scheme in fact had that effect. And my office followed up on those requests, looking at my file here more than 20 times, and it finally produced a response in the form of a report, and that only came to us last week. Now, you should remember that in British Columbia, we have Freedom of Information legislation that requires the government or public bodies to produce information within 30 working days when it's requested. So this is far beyond what is legislatively required. So that's the first level of concern here. But then the interesting thing is what they finally produced after more than a year of requests. And what was produced to us last week was a report dated January 2015, and it's got on the front cover, this information in this document is intended for internal ICBC use only. So it was a report commissioned by ICBC, which is a report on the British Columbia 2010 Impaired Driving Initiative, trying to look at whether the scheme has been effective. Trying to do a statistical analysis to sort out, is this effective? Is it saving lives? Are there less accidents? What's happened? The interesting thing, in addition to the very long delay in turning this over, is that the author of the report concluded it was not possible to come to the conclusion which the Attorney General has been trumpeting.
That the scheme has saved 260 lives.
Correct. And the reason that analysis, that result couldn't be substantiated, is really twofold. First of all, the author of the report concludes that there was no baseline information about what would have occurred but for the change. And further, the statistical information gathered by the police is not complete. They don't, for example, include contributing causes to an average of 17% of fatal accidents. So the author of the report concludes that, well, you might look at it and say there's been some reduction in the number of fatal accidents, although that's an interesting stat, because they actually went up the year the scheme was introduced and then appeared to go down after that. But you can't conclude, according to the author of this report, that any such change was a result of the changes to the impaired driving scheme in British Columbia. The author says, without such data, it would not be possible to say whether any observed changes in collision frequency over time were due to the impaired driving initiative or many other factors. He lists weather, other road safety initiatives, traffic density, road improvements, availability of public transportation, etc. So as a result of that inadequate statistical information, it's not possible, according to the author of this report that ICBC had prepared, to come to the conclusion which the government has been trumpeting as the response to concerns about the fairness of the scheme. And that's troubling in two respects. First of all, the failure to provide that in a timely way, as the legislation requires.
As per your request.
As per our request, that's
so
right.
How long did it take you? How long should it have taken and how long did it take you?
Well, we started near the end of 2014. And the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act provides that information shall be provided by a public body within 30 days after receiving a request. So 30 days is what the legislation requires, right. And they took more than a year to provide it. And during that one-year period, when they didn't provide this single report, which was plainly in their possession, a number of things happened, including the case going to the Supreme Court of Canada, where the government submission was, look, this saves lives, you ought to uphold it. Public debate took place where the Attorney General has repeatedly quoted as saying that this scheme has saved 260 lives since September of 2010. So what's happened here is both a failure to comply with the Freedom of Information legislation and, significantly, as a result of that failure, a report that may undermine what the government has been claiming in terms of the effectiveness of this scheme wasn't released to the public. So that the debate that went on was premised upon claims that may not be supported by the actual statistical information.
Inadequate stats, as you're saying.
That's right. So they had a report saying you can't do an analysis to determine the effectiveness of this change because there isn't proper baseline information and there are not proper statistics in terms of the causes of accidents such that it's possible to do a real analysis of whether this scheme was effective or not.
Riveting stuff. We're going to take a break when we come back. More on Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pearson. Stay with us.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. Everyone has an opinion.
He says on one hand it's a good deal, on the next comment he says it's not.
We've got the facts with news you can count on. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
Does this sound familiar?
Honey, it's your turn to clean the bathroom. Honey?
If cleaning your shower walls is scaring you off, then Island Marble has the solution. They offer groutless designer panels that look like tiles without the maintenance or issues associated with grout. And they're completely mold and mildew resistant. Yet another bathroom innovation from Island Marble. Endless possibilities. Learn more at islandmarble.ca.
At Simon G Jewelry, we believe that a truly great piece of jewelry is the one that gets worn the most, and one you and your loved ones will treasure for generations. For more than 30 years, that idea drives every piece we design, from working with metals whose colors will never change to the cut of every stone we set. No detail is too small. Come celebrate the best of life at
Palmera Jewelers at the corner of Ford and Broad and PalmeraJewelers.com.
Out with the old, in with the new at Lansdowne Appliance Gallery. Check out their all-new line of beautiful black stainless KitchenAid appliances. This sleek and exciting new look and design has a premium quality exterior black stainless finish. And the new KitchenAid refrigerators feature a platinum interior, LED lighting, and soft closed doors, all with a 10-year compressor warranty. Black stainless KitchenAid appliances at Lansdowne Appliance on the corner of Douglas and Kings and at LansdowneAppliance.com.
What has your school done to help our environment? Whether it's greening your community, being energy efficient, or reducing landfill waste, tell us what your school is doing to make the world a greener place. You can superpower your school with $25,000 worth of innovative technology. Contest is open to all secondary and elementary publicly funded schools. Be an Ecovator and make more happen. Visit stables.ca/powereco to enter.
Ford technicians have a combined 1 million hours in training nationwide. Access to specialized tools and equipment, and conduct an up to 83-point inspection with vehicle report card for the works.
Spark plug.
Other garages may not, so they might have to make things up as they go along.
Oh, wait, squirt and squirt it.
When it comes to your Ford, beware of parts unknown. See store for details.
C-Fact Sunday, the biggest stories of the week, revisited with all your favorite hosts. Sunday morning at 8 on C-Fact 1070. The biggest news events, the stories in our community. She has it covered. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Some riveting stuff that Michael has uncovered here. Give us just a quick Coles Note version for people tuning in.
So what we have here is the government failing to provide disclosure, freedom of information disclosure, of a report that calls into question government claims about whether the impaired driving scheme in British Columbia has been effective in saving lives or not.
When it comes down to it, the freedom of information legislation is it that states that you should have your request fulfilled within 30 days. What are the repercussions? What can be done about the government not adhering to the 30-day request?
I suppose during the course of it, somebody could bring an application requiring compliance. But at the end of the day, when there's a failure to comply, as there has been in this case, the government's politely written back to me indicating that they apologize for the delay, or ICBC did, apologizing for the delay, indicating they're aware they've exceeded the legislative time frames and thanking me for my patience. What's been produced is an apology for breaching the act, and they've finally turned over, after more than a year, the report that calls into question the claims the government has been making. But at this point, it seems to me, if there's to be any implication, it's going to be a political one about people forming a judgment about whether it's acceptable that the government agency not provide important information in a timely way. And in that intervening period of time, that more than a year when they didn't turn over this report, important things have happened. I mean, this case has gone to the Supreme Court of Canada, and you can imagine how disappointed you might be if you were a litigant on the other side of that case, where the government is making submissions about how effective this scheme is, when there's an ICBC report calling into question those very claims, and that wasn't made public for more than a year.
Do we know if the Attorney General had hands on that report prior to making these claims that the scheme has saved 260 lives.
I would sure hope not, because that would undermine, you know, the sort of claims she was making.
So where did the stats come from then?
I don't know, and she should be asked that question. I mean, ICBC prepared a report, it's dated January 2015, that concludes that it isn't possible to do the sort of statistical analysis and to sort of figure out whether this scheme had the desired result or not due to inadequate baseline information and inadequate statistics about the causes of accidents.
So who could possibly have come up with the 260 lives saved figure then?
I don't know where that figure was arrived at. And, you know, of course, these things in life, you may have different people that have drawn different conclusions about things. But in order to have a meaningful public debate or a meaningful analysis in a courtroom, it's important that all of the information be there. And if you've got a public body not producing or not turning over an important report into an important public issue and an issue that's before the courts, you don't wind up with a debate based on the truth, right? In an ideal world, you would have important issues of public policy and important issues of law decided on the basis of the most fact and the most reliable information we can get. And it's simply not satisfactory from a public point of view that you have this sort of an analysis that calls into question the effectiveness of the a scheme such as this one. Instead, you have a government message about this thing just being effective without having released a report, as they were required to do, that came to the conclusion you couldn't do the required analysis to figure out whether this scheme was working or not.
So the ICBC report stating such should have been released.
There's no question this should have been released.
You shouldn't have had to go through the Freedom of Information process, protracted as it was. You think this should have been released, or it's required?
It's legally required that it be released. My legal assistant, she ran out of space on the front of the file and had to go over to the inside of it with all of the various requests and follow-ups and emails and where is this and when can we expect it and why haven't we received it. These sort of requests starting in back in 2014 and carrying on all the way to this month, when finally last week they cough up this important report that calls into question the claims the government has been making. So what it means is that instead of there being a scheme which is of questionable fairness that is effective, we have a scheme which is of questionable fairness that's of questionable effectiveness. And that's a very different thing. We shouldn't have public issues of public policy decided absent this sort of important information. People should have this. Judges should have this. Members of the public should have this. When there is an active debate into an important issue of public policy,
predicated on what?
Well, I mean, the issue.
No, but I mean, you think that all of these decisions have been predicated on?
They've been predicated on the government. The debate has been sort of framed in terms of the government claiming whether or not this scheme is fair. It saved 260 lives. Well, that's an important claim that's being made. And if that claim isn't supported by the analysis, it's important people know that so they can properly analyze whether this scheme is a good idea or not. We can look at certainly whether it's fair and whether the review process is adequate, but if there's misleading information about whether it's working or not, that's critically important.
Let's bring Darren in. Hi, Darren. You're on Legally Speaking at CFAX.
Yeah, who's the guest again? Sorry.
Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam & Pearson.
Yeah, I guess, Michael, you've been dealing with this for quite some time with people that have probably been improperly apprehended due to being intoxicated or having a couple of beverages, I'd imagine. It's been about 10 years, you said?
This latest scheme came into effect in 2010, and it's the way it works is it now tries to make decisions based on a roadside screening device rather than a more accurate test, and then doesn't have a very thorough review process.
Yeah, no, it's kind of like basically judge and jury and et cetera. I'm just very familiar with what goes on. And what you're saying and the questions go on and where it arises and the bodies of government that are involved, and basically the Integrated Road Safety Unit are funded by ICBC. I know it's for a fact. And I believe where the stat has come from, I'm guessing it's not a fact, but I know it probably come from MAD, who has had a lot of political power in the last election. And I think they have a lot to do with how it came about to get that stat of saving lives, whereas ICBC is paying these officers from each detachment, say in the Greater Victoria area, two from Sioux, two from Oak Bay, two from Victoria, two from Saanich. And they go out and they do these roadblocks, and they do speed traps as well. They're quite often on the Sukahola. I'm out in Sioux. Just saw them yesterday, actually, and they hide on people's properties. And they jump out with a speed gun to get somebody, you know, speeding. And it's a cash cow where people are misled, and they're just doing what they want to apprehend innocent people. So I just leave you with those comments.
Thanks, Darren. Michael, your reaction to what Darren had to say.
Well, I think one of the things that the caller points out, sort of talking about doing what they want, and I think what's really required here, if you want the scheme to be fair, and I can't say whether it's effective or not now having read this latest report, but to be fair, there should be a proper process for a review. There should be a proper process where there can be questions asked of the person issuing the report. An independent, genuinely independent body making decisions about it that has appropriate authority. So we should make sure, as a baseline, that the scheme is fair. And then the second part is, does it work? And that's the part where it looks like we've got a failure of information here about whether it works.
So to be sure, though, it may well work. We just can't statistically back that up by your estimation, by ICBC's estimation.
That's right. I mean, what is fair to say is it looks like there has been generally a trend towards a decreasing number of fatal accidents.
Good news.
I think that's fair, and that's good news. Now, it's sort of odd that they went up the year the thing was introduced and then appear to have gone down. But a few things call into question whether this scheme had anything to do with that. They include the fact that for a number of months, the scheme was struck down and not in operation at all because it was found to be unconstitutional, and there was no corresponding increase in the number of fatal motor vehicle accidents. And then, as the author of the report pointed out, a whole number of other factors go into whether and how many accidents there are in any given year. Things like, what's the weather like that year? Or what's happening in terms of other enforcement action? Is it a bunch of speed traps that's causing it? And the authors pointed out other problems, like there are inconsistent results in different areas of the province. So if you've got the same impaired driving scheme all across the province, why would things go up in one place and down in the other? And then finally, if you're trying to sort it out, there has to be proper record keeping, and the author points out that on average 17%, but in some years up to I think it's 26% of fatal accidents, the police in their database just haven't typed in any contributing causes to the accident. It's there's a fatal accident and there's a database showing that there was a fatal accident the police attended, but they just haven't put in what factors contributed to it, you know, things like speed or lack of sleep or mechanical failure or alcohol. So if you have no data about what contributed to a particular accident, how on earth are you supposed to figure out whether some legislative change was effective? That information needs to be collected if you want to do a proper analysis. It's not enough to just say, well, look, in some general way, a number of fatal accidents has gone down in most years, but what caused that? And it's not enough to say, well, this happened in one year, so that must be the contributing factor, because if that was the reason for it, why didn't it go up when the scheme wasn't working? And why did it go up the first year it was introduced? And that's what the author of this report, in part, says, look, you just can't do a proper analysis without real data and a baseline, and we don't have those things.
Damning report. Good work on your team's part. Thank you for bringing it to light here on CFAX.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam and Pierce.